Have you ever looked out the window on a flight and wondered about those long stretches of land that appear to be almost uninhabited? At night, it's total blackness. On the ground, the world may seem like it's teeming with cities and traffic and connected by a circuit board of highways and roads that all seem to lead somewhere. But it's not actually that way. Explorer Peter Stark joins us with a bird's eye view at some of those seemingly empty places on the globe. Places that have their own histories of settlement and abandonment. In his book, The Last Empty Places, A Journey Through Blank Spots on the American Map, Stark explores these blank spots in America. But he's traveled the world from Greenland to Manchuria in search of real wilderness as well. And he joins us today to share what he's learned. Peter, thanks for joining us for a visit to some of these very desolate places.
Well, I'm delighted to talk about this with you, Rick. It's so fun.
Did you just think, hey, my last name is Stark, I think I'm going to focus on Stark places?
That probably had something to do with it. And also my upbringing. I came from a very adventurous family who did crazy outdoor stuff. That helped too.
Because there is Stark stuff on this planet that a lot of people jump over or fly over or avoid. And there's a lot hiding out there and it's worth checking out. So you started in America. How did you end up, first of all, interested in empty places? And then how did that end up taking you globally?
Well, it's really been a passion of mine since I think I was a small boy. And it might have been partly my father was really into frontier history in Wisconsin. And so I learned a lot about Indian tribes and indigenous people. And as I grew older and I eventually got towards reading and writing and journalism, I developed this passion of going to find these places. And going to find places where people still lived in a very traditional way, and in a way that I didn't feel had been homogenized by Westernization. I mean, before I became a journalist, it was a passion, a driving passion of mine. And so my entire life, I've been drawn to the most remote places I could find on the face of the globe. And so what you're talking about is a few of those places where I ended up in the course of many, many years of travel.
It seems like all travel writers and travelers like to do is find places that have sort of missed the modern boat. You can go to remote places, you can go to vast empty places. Is there a sense that the people you encounter, the little villages you encounter, the towns, the crossroads in these most uninhabited corners, that they are somehow behind the rapid change of pace on this planet?
That would certainly be one way of looking at it, that they're behind the rapid pace of change on the planet. Another way to look at it is they're way ahead of the rapid pace of change, that they have ways, life ways, if you want to call it that, that have been tested for thousands of years and have sustained a social fabric and a way of life, and that they're stable communities and they're, you know, healthy people and they're emotionally connected in a way that maybe the modern world isn't so much.
So we could learn from them. We could be inspired by them. You wrote in your book, The Last Empty Places, that the compulsion to seek out the wild secret places, the blank spots, never left me, but has only grown stronger. And with time and age and resources, it extended over a greater geographical range, as it did for John Muir and Henry David Thoreau. The search has taken me over the decades to wild, empty regions of Africa, to the hidden valleys of Tibet, to the ice fields of Greenland, and the forests of Manchuria and many places in between. Let's talk about some of those places. What was your experience in Africa? I think of Africa as teeming with people. Tell us about empty Africa.
Well, there, just as there are in the United States and anywhere in the world, there are places in Africa that are not teeming with people. And northern Mozambique is one of those places. It's remarkably uninhabited. It's a huge stretch of forest. They call it Miombo Forest. So it's like a kind of an open forest. And I was invited to go on a exploratory kayak expedition down the Lugenda River, which is 750 kilometers long and had never been paddled in its length, I don't think by native people or any Westerners. And so we were on this tiny kayak expedition, and it was like everything you could ever want and way more than I wanted in an African exploration. It was literally what early explorers must have felt like. I mean, that's the first time I've really felt that. You have no idea. You're going, you know, through this jungly river, vines hanging, you're in a little kayak and you're going around a river bend the water's going fast. You have no idea what's around that river bend. And sometimes it was a waterfall. And sometimes you'd almost go over that waterfall. Other times you'd come around a river bend, there'd be a pod of hippos, which people or African visitors know are they're the most dangerous animal in Africa, because when the males are extremely territorial and they'll just crush a canoe, a native canoe, not to mention a foreigner's kayak, they just crush it between their teeth. Or, you know, crocs are diving off the banks. So the times that we flipped over, which I did a number of times, I mean, it's like you're literally swimming with the crocs. And halfway down that, and plus there were the rapids, not to mention the rapids, you know, which we got worse and worse and worse as we went down. And there are no villages.
You probably didn't have a guidebook that says this is a level 3 or so. So you didn't know what was around the corner, and there's no 911. You're off the grid. There's no way to get help.
You know, it was one of the times in the world where you realize there are no jet planes flying over here. Oh, it's nothing. Wow. It's just silence, silence. And remarkably remote.
Yeah.
And then stars, incredible stars. And not only stars, but then you're like washing the dishes at night in the river. And there are two of you have to do it. And one of you is shining a headlamp out into the water so you can see the double red eyes of the crocodiles coming towards you on the riverbank. And because they'll pull you right off the riverbank into the water.
So there are places in Africa where you are in the minority when it comes to the animal kingdom.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, I would have bailed out halfway down that trip after some serious swims through rapids if I could. But I realized that if I bailed out, you know, there's like no exit. There's nowhere to go. You can walk through the woods for the next 3 weeks by yourself.
Well, I'm glad you're okay. Tell us about your experience in the hidden valleys of Tibet.
Well, and that's another, that was one of the, all of these were such highlights of my life. And I mean, that just, it kind of brings tears to my eyes, that part of the world that I had this crazy idea after Amy and I were first married about, it was kind of a honeymoon trip following the length of the Yangtze River from its source on the Tibetan Plateau all the way down to Shanghai, which is thousands of miles. So for the first month of that, we managed with a great deal of difficulty and expense to hire Tibetan nomads and some Chinese guides to take us through these very remote valleys of the Tibetan Plateau in Qinghai province, right outside of Tibet proper. And it was a totally traditional nomadic Tibetan lifestyle that we were just walking right through for weeks and weeks and greeted so hospitably at these big woven wool black nomad tents and put down on sheepskins in front and served bowls of steaming yak milk with just endless, endless mountains all around us and prayer flags flapping in the winds. It was incredible.
When it comes to travel experiences like that, I feel like an amazing homebody. I mean, these are options that people can have. Adventure writer and historian Peter Stark is helping us explore the beauty of the world's more remote and unpopulated spaces right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Peter writes about wilderness survival for Outside Magazine and visits remote corners of America in his book, The Last Empty Places. He also writes about George Washington, the history of Astoria, Oregon, and recounts the rivalry between William Henry Harrison and Chief Tecumseh in Gallop Toward the Sun. Peter's joining us from his home in Montana. Okay, well, take us now to Greenland, because Greenland is in the news lately because of climate change and the melting ice cap. More and more of Greenland is green. What was your experience in Greenland?
Well, even though it is melting, there's still a lot of it that's not green.
Yeah.
A lot of it. And we were in that part. I had this crazy idea. I was writing a lot for Outside Magazine then, which was still pretty new. And interest of the magazine was interested in doing crazy things. And so I came up with this crazy idea. I called it Driving to Greenland. And the idea was to get in a car, in this case, my father-in-law's VW van here in Missoula, Montana, and drive straight north on US Highway 93. And keep driving until we came to the end of the road, and then trying to keep going after that. You know, and I'd done a little homework ahead of time, but, you know, it was still kind of like launching into who knows what. So we ended up, you know, it was like a 5-day drive in the VW van up to Yellowknife in Northwest Territories. And then we managed to get little commercial flights kind of across the Arctic. We ended up in Baffin Island. Then we ended up hitchhiking on this bush plane that had been hired by this wealthy German couple because the woman was a landscape painter. And so they were chartering this little tiny plane to go up to Ellesmere Island. And Ellesmere Island, you know, if you know your Arctic history, that's the end of the road in Canada. I mean, there's no road. It's the end of everything, the end of the land in Canada. That was like the jumping off place for the North Pole, you know, for the explorations of the North Pole. And then once we got into there's a little tiny landing strip, Inuit village called Gris Fjord in southern Ellesmere Island. And we left the German couple there and for a few hours, supposedly. And Amy and I had hired the pilot, the French-Canadian pilot, to fly from Ellesmere Island over to Greenland. And, you know, at that point, the globe is kind of, everything's getting closer together as you're that far north on the globe. And so Greenland is only like 200 miles away from Canada. So we took this little plane with this pilot, Jock, and this is in early 90s, so GPS doesn't exist. No magnetic compass works up that far north. And so we're like, partway, you know, like we're about an hour into this flight over this beautiful icy blue waters down below and mountain icebergs poking up everywhere. And I'm sitting in the front seat and Jacques takes this map that he has in his lap, this big paper map, and he just kind of bundles it in a wad and shoves it in my lap. See if you can figure out where we are. and, you know, here we are flying over the Arctic Ocean, somewhere between Greenland and Canada. We designated trying to get to this the farthest north cluster of villages in the world, a place called Kanak in northern Greenland.
What was it like to be in a desolate spot in the ice fields of Greenland?
Well, and then we ran into, after we had kind of a problem crash landing, landing gear broke off on the airplane when we landed on the tundra, but then we ended up getting hooked up with traditional Inuit hunters who took us out by dog sled onto the sea ice to hunt narwhals, which they did with kayaks and harpoons in a very traditional way. And so being way, way, way out on camping on the sea ice with traditional Inuit hunters was an extraordinary experience.
We're considering the value of the world's most remote landscapes on Travel with Rick Steves with author and adventurer Peter Stark. Peter explores the empty parts of Maine, Pennsylvania, Oregon, and New Mexico in his book, The Last Empty Places. His website is peterstarkauthor.com. Peter, just try to capture in one of these places the tranquility, the desolation, the smallness of you under a vast sky, the silence. Take a moment, just one place in all of your travels where you were alone with creation in a way that changed you.
That experience on the ice fields would be a good one, even though, you know, we had Inuit hunters with us, just a few, or a little tiny party. But this was July, and so it's the height of the Arctic summer. And so there were no stars at night. In fact, the sun shone all night long. And the sun would just circle around the horizon. And at midnight, 4 a.m, it would dip a little near the horizon. But it's still, there's ice and broken ice everywhere. And we're camped out there. And the Inuit are like playing cards all night to pass the time. And that's what they do in these little villages. In the summer, they're just up all night long playing cards. And there's time does not exist. It does not exist. And in fact, I wrote a little essay for the New Yorker, the Talk of the Town, about this profound experience. I had this vision that when you're here, this thing that we call hours and days and minutes, it doesn't exist. And we chop our lives into these pieces of schedule. It's like this rigid structure. It doesn't exist up there. And it's the rhythm of the seasons and the rhythm of the weather. And you are totally, in the Arctic, it's so extreme, you're totally subject to that all the time. And so it's like with these hunters, nothing would happen for several days. And all of a sudden they say, okay, let's go. We're going. Pack up right now. Because like the ice is moving, something's breaking, something's moving out. Oh. The big storm's coming. It's like, there's no planning. You just go.
Yeah, you don't set the alarm clock. The alarm clock.
You don't set the alarm clock.
You know, that is so fundamental. And in the United States, we're the opposite extreme of that as a society that thinks of time as money. You know, we're just trained. We bank it, we spend it, we invest it, we save it, we waste it. It's like a commodity. Different societies are different that way. That was why I had more culture shock in India than in other places. It's just because the notion of time In India, time's like bubble gum. You know, you just play with it. And when you're sitting on an ice cap, you're just waiting for the ice to start moving. But you don't need a watch for that.
I can see totally when you're talking about India. Yeah, I mean, I've traveled there a little bit, but I totally understand. Yeah, it's not this rigid system that we create here in the West.
Now, you know, I know from reading through your book, The Last Empty Places, that you were inspired by the great transcendentalist thinkers like Emerson and Thoreau. What is transcendentalism, and how does that factor into your passion for empty places?
Those thinkers were really, I guess, prevalent in the early 1800s. And in part, they grew out of the Romantic movement of the late 1700s and early 1800s. And the Romantic movement was this, at this time, is kind of a transition in Western society, when, as industrialization encroached, nature, you know, the natural world started to disappear, and it started to be considered more valuable. And it became a place of beauty rather than fear and terror. The mountains became a place of beauty in many eyes. And so out of that romantic strain came these transcendentalists who began to look at nature as a spiritual place and a sort of uncivilized nature, wild nature, as having spiritual value. Then you get Emerson's and the Thoreau's, and Thoreau, of course, lived it at Walden Pond, even though he was like 2 miles from Concord, Massachusetts. But, you know, he embraced that concept.
You can have that by flying all the way to Greenland, or you can have it by having your own Walden Pond. It's just, it might be, you don't have many options when you're in Greenland because you're surrounded by nothingness. And in Walden Pond, you've got a mall just down the street. But you can benefit from that. That's this whole notion.
Exactly.
There's more to life than increasing its speed. And
exactly.
Well-being is not necessarily preceded by material in a hyphen. What's the takeaway from all of this? I think Thoreau wrote, to live deep and suck the marrow out of life. You know, he said, we're not looking at nature. We are nature looking into nature. This is fascinating, radical stuff. And it's almost subversive for an American to think this way these days. It's dangerous.
It could be dangerous. Well, I tell people, you know, as you say, you don't have to go to the Arctic. You can have an adventure in your own backyard. And with kids, I mean, you can really have an adventure with your own backyard. And I think a lot of it, as you're saying, you know, when Thoreau talks about sucking the marrow out of the bones of life, it's living in that moment and sort of rejecting the notion of time that we've just been talking about. And it's living in that immediacy of things are here and things are alive and I'm here and I'm alive. And in our society, a lot of what that takes is to get away from human constructs and human busyness. Just before we started this talk, I was walking around in our North Hills here in Missoula. I didn't see a person. I was with our black lab, and it's just this incredibly soothing moment for me to do that.
And you could probably live any number of places, and you've chosen to live in Missoula as a kind of Walden Pond, I would imagine.
It is kind of, yes, you are right. Yeah, very good.
Well, this is Travel with Rick Steves, and we have sure enjoyed you taking us to places that we wouldn't find in a guidebook, places that you don't need a reservation. You won't find a nice hotel to go to put your head on a pillow at night. But you sure can find a transformational experience. And we need that more than ever these days. Peter Stark, thanks for joining us, and happy transcendental travels.
Thank you.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton, Kasmura Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court upload the shows to our website. Sheila Gerzoff handles affiliate promotions. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.